WCCA, the world's most forward-thinking professional accountancy body.
Welcome to this podcast, produced in association with our strategic partners, Chartered Accountants Australia and New Zealand, and with Generation CFO. The phrase transformation has been used in many conversations over the past years. Its definition can be confusing. The pace of change for organisations is continuing to accelerate, and speed of acceleration probably reflects yet more change in the years to come. So how should the finance community play its role in driving their organisations towards this future? ACCA, in association with Chartered Accountants Australia and New Zealand and Generation CFO, have been considering the impact of transformation on organisations and the role that the finance community can play. The observations are presented in our joint report, Transformational Journeys, Finance in an Agile World. This is the second in a series of podcasts that accompany the report. This discussion focuses on the business case and how we might strive towards a new paradigm looking at value. My name is Clive Webb, and I'm the Head of Business Management in ACCA's Professional Insights team. And I'm pleased today to be joined by my guests, Chris Carter and Tim Barber. Chris is the principal at OrgShift Solutions based in Canada, and Tim is a visiting fellow at the University of Hull here in the UK. So welcome, Chris, and welcome, Tim.
Thank you, Clive.
Hello.
So, the business case. Through the roundtables that we held with ACCA and CNZ members, they were mightily confused as the relevance and the applicability of the business case, especially in transformational projects. I wondered, probably Tim, to start us off, does the business case fit in transformation, and how should we think about what a business case really is?
I think, Clive, the business case absolutely has to fit into the world of transformation. But the challenge is that, as you said before, the pace of change is such that it's really hard to keep up, and the business case, as it has been, is absolutely not keeping up with the change that is ongoing. And I think, therefore, there is the opportunity to fundamentally rethink the business case, its purpose, its longevity, and really its importance within the business. Historically, I would say that business cases, you know, have just been very financially focused. They've been for a point in time. They've been a single sign-off decision. And once that decision has been made, they've typically been put in a cupboard and never referred to again. You know, and going forward, that absolutely isn't good enough at all. You know, the business cases need to be moved away from just focused on financial to a much broader view of value and the fit in terms of the strategy and the transformation that's taking place. It shouldn't be, you know, a single point in time. It has to endure over the length of the transformation, and we've often referred to that as making sure that the business case is live, and we can talk about that a bit more. And in that sense, it needs to be referred back to. You need to be able to track the benefits to what you originally said in the business case, so that you've got a live document that you can audit against and you can track against and you can learn against as well.
So, Chris, what's your perception of this?
Well, I would completely echo everything Tim offered, and I won't repeat it. What I will do is extend it, in that business cases need to evolve across the life cycle, and how they evolve over the life cycle of a transformation project or program is to include updates to it over time, as Tim said, and to reflect learning. But they also need to be used to drive decision making around transformation program management. In many cases, business cases are a one-time event, and they are used exclusively to secure funding for an investment and to be able to move forward on some technology-based purchase that will help transform an organization. But the reality is that After a year or two, which is how long transformation programs start to take root, except in calamitous, if that's a word, situations like COVID, which precipitated a change to happen much faster and adoption of certainly certain technologies, that transformation programs need to adapt to fit their context. I've said many times over the last 18 months that, you know, I'm pretty sure most transformation programs had to adjust to take into account COVID. And therefore, that's a great example of an externality that needs to drive change to programs, not just in an organization. So therefore, when something's in flight, you need to understand the outcomes that you were originally intending to facilitate. You need to decide on what are the measures, both interim and longer term, that indicate that in fact you're being successful. And lastly, you need to use those indicators, those measurements, to actually drive decision-making about, are we doing enough of the right things? And therefore, do we need to make adjustments to the program? And are there other things going on that would also force us to make changes to the program? Are we getting enough of the right stuff done? Are we doing it in the right way? And are we getting the benefits that we sought in the first place?
So does this align to the concept that transformation is an ongoing activity? It isn't really a finite activity. And businesses, organizations will continue to need to evolve. Does that fit in with what both of you have just said?
I think absolutely, Clive. I mean, the way we are in the world at the moment, and we will continue to be, is that, as you said in your introduction, the pace of change is just enormous. You know, the only thing true about technology change is it will keep on getting quicker and we will struggle even more to keep up with it. And therefore, businesses will absolutely need to continue to evolve all of the time. And in doing that, you know, as Chris has said, there are choices to be made, continual choices to be made. You know, we don't have the luxury of being able to make a single change and the world is right again. You know, everything is just going on too much at the same time. And I think my perspective on this has been businesses continually need to look at the external environment and what is going on and what is changing. As Chris said, whether it be COVID or, you know, multiple changes in what consumers want and how consumers are behaving, or, and the same for governments in that sense. You know, and that external environment is, you know, keeping on top of that is, you know, really quite critical. But at the same time, you've got to understand what's doable by when internally. And the business case is around those choices. What do you need to do, and what's can you change internally at what pace? You know, and the business case really should be about what are the choices that we're making, because there will always be multiple choices, and what's the path we're going to choose? And, you know, that is, you know, I think fundamentally what it is about. And that's why, you know, as I said before, the business case should be viewed as a living document that is linked to the strategy, is clear about the direction of travel, but then really brings out the choices available in a way that allows decisions to be made against them as to what's the right set of choices next to be made, but then be tracked against that. Because there's no, you know, if you can't understand how well you're doing and what is going well and what your constraints are, then you're not going to be informed about your next set of choices and how easy it's going to be to do them and what's the pace of change in the external environment at the same time.
And I would add on to Tim in that your point about making choices and pathways is that a business case, in my view, is too rarely aligned to or insufficiently aligned to overall business objectives or strategic objectives of an organization. And much of my work today in the, I'll call it, ongoing recovery from COVID is helping organizations, both small and large, with refreshing their strategic plans now that they've had 18 months to sort of think about it, because they maybe wanted to do it 18 months ago but couldn't, but are now realizing they need a new approach. And so therefore their strategic objectives are being refreshed, and the logical follow-on from that would be that means the transformation program choices need to be refreshed as well and realigned to those objectives. And that is a key link that I see missing in many, many business cases.
Yeah, I think one of the transitions that's taking place at the moment is the external expectations. And we're moving certainly in the corporate world from a position where the primary goal of the business and the board was to increase shareholder value, to one where it's a much broader set of expectations. Shareholder value is still in there, but you know, you've also got now the impact on the environment, on society, and a range of other elements that need to be balanced across the piece. And I think in a world where your only goal was shareholder value, then you make decisions differently to one where you've got multiple criteria, even multiple values that you're trying to meet and balance, and really going through a process of understanding what's the best way to do that and respond, and then sort of articulate that in the business case as to the choices you're making, the impact it's going to have, both externally and internally in terms of the resources you need to align to be able to make that happen.
So Tim, does that link us to sort of board of your purpose, but also to things like the ESG agenda, which don't necessarily have financial impact in the profit sense, but are necessary for organizations to survive and grow in this current environment?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, the expectations on businesses, whether it be private sector, and but also I think in the public sector, you know, are changing quite significantly. That, you know, environmental sustainable agenda is there. It needs to be dealt with. We've got COP26 coming up in a few weeks' time, which is about how do we get to net zero in 2050. You know, businesses are at the heart of making that happen. So what is the impact of the decisions that they're going to make? So I think, you know, businesses really need to view that broader set of value that they are trying to deliver, whether that be to the environment, whether that be to society and the communities that they operate within, and really just get away from just it just being shareholder value. You know, the world is just getting more complex, and you know that there are far greater set of expectations placed on businesses now than there have been previously, and that needs to be reflected.
And maybe I can just ask both of you, how do we succinctly describe this concept of value? Is there a neat definition of value? Because we've used the term a few times in this discussion.
I think that's a good question, and I'm not necessarily sure there's a straightforward answer to it. I think one of the challenges in this is we always go back to financial value, you know, and we go to dollars and cents or pounds and pence or whatever it is, because that's our comfort ground and we sort of understand that. And certainly when we look at, you know, say social value, and I think value is the what's the positive impact and what's the negative impact that we're having in certain areas. So, you know, in the environmental area, what's our, you know, the positive impact on the environment of the decisions being taken, and what's the negative in terms of the way that the business is operating. You know, so you can use proxies to get it back to financial value, but it's really thinking through, I'd say in the environmental world, okay, what's the impact on CO2? You know, there is, you can define that. There are quantitative measures around it. If you want to, you can put a, you know, a carbon measure against it and turn it into a financial value. But it's finding those measures that really say, you know, yes, we are improving our impact on carbon, or no, actually, we are really in parts of what we're doing driving our carbon emissions up. On the society side of things, you know, what are the things we're doing as a business which are having a positive impact on the community and the way we operate with the community, the way we work through supply chains? You know, supply chains are a really great example of, quite often they've been driven by, you know, simply price and cost, but You know, if you take that more broadly and look at some of the big supply chains in the fashion industry, well, what's the impact on, you know, fashion factories, manufacturers in Bangladesh? You know, how do you make sure that your supply chains are not, you know, working in countries which are either corrupt or, you know, there is a very significant impact on society? Now, you know, again, you can find those quantitative measures. There are lots of qualitative in there as well. But this is part of the business case. What are those measures? What is the impact on the business? You know, so for, you know, I'd say, you know, there's much you can do which negatively impacts on the business, whether it be environmental or societal, which really will flow through into in a very negative way in terms of shareholder value. And ultimately that comes with a cost. Now you need to understand your business and really understand what it is, the value you're trying to provide as a business. And that should be articulated in the strategy and the culture and the ethos of the business. And really, how is that reflected in the decisions that you make? You know, I'd give an example of a recent company that I worked for. Now, you know, one of the key, it was a big engineering business, and one of the key factors in there was health and safety. You know, you would not make decisions that had a negative impact on health and safety. And if you did, you know, and it'd be, you know, it was publicly known, and that would impact on the share price in the way that it goes. You know, so it's understanding those things that are important to the business and important to the external environment, articulating that in the way you make decisions, and therefore the way that you put forward the options within the business case. Chris, from your perspective?
Yeah. Well, I think a few things. One is that I believe many people confuse measures with outcomes, and that measures are in fact, you know, proxies. They're just indicators of the outcomes that are you're making choices about. Like, what are you choosing to define as value? Which are not the value is not the measure. The value is in the outcomes and the objectives that you're trying to fulfill, and ultimately are fulfilled through your overall strategy. And then the transformation program and or initiative choices that you make as a result of deciding that that's your strategic path. So I think that's an important distinction. There are many ways to measure, and in fact, you just described. I love your example where health and safety, you know, leads to something else, which is, you know, more healthy workers, which leads to, you know, a better shareholder perception of value in that case. So there's a causal chain there. And I think if that logic in my view is also missing for most business cases, is there's a bit of a, if they build it, they will come, or this answer is just so obvious, therefore I don't need to actually go through that kind of actual more formal logic making, which says, if I do this, if I pull this particular lever here, what are the actual results that I can expect from putting in this technology, making these process changes, doing some policy work, enabling it through better governance and so forth, a set of organizational levers, the results of those, and then how do I use those results to do something different in my company or in my organization? Those are the changes that you actually need. Those are the things you need to measure. Are we getting enough of those? And then that would lead you to, if the logic chain is sound, ultimately making a positive contribution to some of the longer term outcomes and thus the measures. I just wanted to also return to, you know, what is value. To me, value is a collective set of choices about what we choose value is, should be. And it isn't, this is not just the domain of the executive suite anymore. It is broader. And Tim, you started referring to shareholders. I think value is in the eye of the beholders, and I put the S very deliberately there. That you know, these days is more closely articulated both from an outside-in perspective when it comes to the customers you serve, the shareholders who are looking for value, if we're talking about, you know, publicly traded entities, and stakeholders more broadly, and I think there are those are difficult to satisfy across that broad spectrum. And there are the companies that are doing this best are navigating through some fairly difficult, turbulent waters around trade-offs and making some choices, strategic choices, which then lead to transformational choices about what they choose to spend their limited organizational capacity and resources on.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. On my desk at home, I have a piece of paper that is written on it, a quote that I keep with me. And this quote is by a guy called Pavan Sukta. And it basically says, the rules of business urgently need changing so corporations compete on the basis of innovation, resource conservation, and satisfaction of multiple stakeholders, rather than on the basis of who is the most effective in influencing government regulation, avoiding taxes, and obtaining subsidies for harmful activities in order to maximize the return for just one stakeholder, that's the shareholders. You know, and I think, you know, that's, to Chris's point, is there are multiple stakeholders involved in businesses now, and to some extent or another, they need to be satisfied in what's happening. And I, you know, to build on Chris's point about the logic through to the strategy and the needs of the stakeholders, and that absolutely needs to be there, and typically is not there in business cases. I think the second complex business cases is the question of how are we going to get there? Business cases are typically, this is where we are today, and this is where we want to be in the future. We will undergo this transformation, and this is, you know, the value or the outcomes that we're going to achieve. That journey is one of making multiple choices along the way, making decisions along the way that are going to be both internally doable and meet the needs of your stakeholders in terms of what their expectations are. And the negotiation of that implementation path is a really critical part of what should be reflected in the business case. You know, the question of what type of value are we going to achieve by when, you know, is a critical part of the business case, and it is rarely in there. You know, my experience with transformations is, you know, they're failing when somebody, one of the stakeholders, asks the question of, can we have some quick wins, please? They ask for quick wins because the transformation is failing, and it's failing on the basis of, we're not getting the value expected by the time we expected it. So please, can you do something random to make that happen? All of that to me means that you haven't negotiated the pathway and you're not managing the pathway, and therefore there's a mismatch in expectations. So I do think, you know, from a business case perspective, there is some complexity, both in the what's the logic through to the strategy, as Chris said, but also what's the path and how are you going to manage that path along the way, and be clear about what value you are going to deliver by when, and how you're going to keep people on board and expectations to be managed, both, you know, internally and externally, I think.
So does that take us to the point of the importance of continuing to measure the benefits realized, the value realized as part of this ongoing process? Because a lot of people in the research said, well, we ignore benefits realization because the team's been disbanded and we've all gone away. But actually, that's quite an important point for everything you've just said, both of you, about return to the stakeholders, plural, and that sense of ongoing incremental value over a longer period of time rather than just the finite activity.
Yeah.
It means that the ownership of who owns the benefits and who manages the benefits is has been misplaced in most organizations that I see. The place for transformation program outcome measurement is not with the transformation program. Right. I think your point is valid in that most, probably all, transformation programs are long gone or been reorganized, you know, onto the next priority, which is entirely right in a project or program-based organization. What isn't right is loading those teams up those program offices with measurement responsibilities. They need to set up the measures. They need to perhaps do some of the initial measures, especially for the outcomes that they have more direct visibility and responsibility for facilitating. But the longer term stuff is a corporate ownership piece. And there needs to be an office, if we have to call it that, some sort of role, if we want to make it a little looser, where somebody is in fact in charge of understanding the measures of success for understanding how we are changing, as opposed to just the operational scorecarding. We need transformational scorecarding too. And sometimes in the balanced scorecard world, that gets, you know, I think a little forgotten, because there are strategic measures, sure. And operational measures people have no problem with, especially around scorecarding those. But I believe a big gap is that transformational 2 to 5 year, 2 to 4 year kind of outlook is missed. And the business owns that. No transformation program or project owns that. They can't. They don't live long enough to be able to support it. But they do need to start it well and set up a regime. Tim?
Yeah, I think fundamentally, you always need to be asking the question of, is the transformation working? Is it delivering what we said it would do? Is the business case still valid? And that's, you know, the point I try to make at the beginning is, you know, we should view the business case as being, alive and always there. And we should be trying to link back to what we originally said we were going to achieve and measure what we are actually achieving in doing that. You know, one of the flaws in benefits realization is you get to implementation and somebody says, so how are we going to measure the benefits? Well, that's far too late. You know, it should be there in the business case. You should be clear as to what you're looking to measure and how you're looking to measure and where you're going to get the information from and who's going to collect it, who's going to report it, you know, and all of that should be sorted out. But it needs to be a continual part of what is going on. And, you know, there's often a danger that, you know, you sign off a business case, you put it in a cupboard, and then it is nigh on impossible to stop that project, that program, that transformation, if it is not working. Because how do you know it's not working if you're not tracking the benefits?
Well, I've got a story from my recent client experiences, which is really, really pertinent. So I'll just call this a university in Western Canada that is undergoing significant change due to funding shortfalls introduced by the provincial government. And I've, since coming onto the project in March of this year, I have been looking for, given this is my interest area, you know, where's the benefits realization plan? So as it turns out, there hasn't been one, and it's been for an interesting reason. It's because they've reversed the order of operations generally one sees with transformation. They were forced to have to make some cuts very, very quickly in workforce and then restructure in terms of centralization of certain capabilities and corporate functions, you know, like the traditional HR, finance, IT, those kind of functions, as well as some unique university ones, which is around external engagement, research funding, research admin, those sort of things, and student services. So they've had to do some major sort of shared services initiatives, but they did it after they'd done, you know, one or two rounds of cuts. And so the reason I didn't see a benefits realization plan is because, in fact, they'd already realized the benefits, if you will. Now they're racing to catch up. But what's interesting about this program is that they're now making changes that are prospective. They are making changes to procurement policy, to buying instruments, to some now more longer-term organizational improvements, which they will need to see and track the benefits. And so now they're starting to hear me, because they're now going to be held accountable to actually making those benefits happen. And so now they're realizing they need to put in a sustainment organization, a word that I hate nearly as much as quick wins, by the way, but because it just means it reflects a maintaining as opposed to continuously improving and transforming. But we'll let that one go. But at least they recognize they need an ongoing capability and responsibility that reports to very senior levels. In order to manage, how are we doing? Are we doing enough of the right things? Are we seeing the benefits that we expected? And if not, why not? And make appropriate adjustments and make recommendations for adjustments.
I think we could carry this on for an eternity, but that's been a brilliant conversation. Can I just ask you both for one sort of thought, one key point that you'd like to leave the audience with, just to maybe summarize or to jot their memory of the conversation? Tim?
For me, Clive, it comes back to think broadly about value and what you're trying to achieve and the impact that it's going to have. You know, I do understand that in terms of finance professionals, the world is about finance, but value is a much broader set. And I do think that the, you know, the finance professionals are really critical to this, but their understanding and development of the value that the business requires to deliver upon is really important. It's not just the world of finance anymore. It needs to be that broader world of value.
Thank you. And Chris?
Okay. Well, I'll get on my soapbox for just one moment. That I think benefits, you know, realization in on business cases that are reflected in business cases. You know, there's not enough about logic. They are consequence of doing something, pulling some levers, and the outcomes that result from that. And then how do you know you're winning? How do you know you're achieving those outcomes? Is you need to measure them. And those measurements need to be used to make decisions on an ongoing basis. So there's a logic in benefits realization, just like there's a logic in more generally that if you do this, then you would expect this to happen. Well, if you actually understand the logic and you measure it in terms of outcomes and you use them in decision-making, and that's probably the biggest missing link, is it's not used in decision-making. They're just moved on to the next business case. Then I think we could actually see some real results here.
Brilliant. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Tim, for your thoughts. That was very, very insightful. I'm sure people will have a lot to think about there. We hope you found this session useful. If you wish to read the full report or access any of the abstracts of it, then please visit either the ACCA, Chartered Accountants Australia and New Zealand, or Generation CFO websites, or download the ACCA Professional Insights app. But thank you, Chris. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you, Clive.
Thank you.
And thank you, everybody, for listening, and goodbye.
This podcast was brought to you by ACCA. Find out how we think ahead at accaglobal.com.